Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yamala Arjun Trees, text number 16. Nityam Shut Shama Dehasya Daridrasya Nayana Kankshina. Indriyan Yanushus Yanti Himsapi ni Vini Vartite Nityam. Always shoot with hunger. Shama, weak without necessary strength. Dehasya, of the body of a poor man. Daridrasya, poverty stricken. Anakankshina, always desiring to get sufficient food. Andriyani, the senses, which are compared to snakes. Anushu Shanti, gradually become weaker and weaker with less potency. Himsa api, the tendency to be envious of others. Vinivartante, reduces. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Always hungry, longing for sufficient food, a poverty-stricken man gradually becomes weaker and weaker. Having no extra potency, his senses are automatically pacified. A poverty-stricken man, therefore, is unable to perform harmful, envious activities. In other words, such a man automatically gains the results of the austerities and penances adopted voluntarily by saintly persons. Purport, according to the opinion of experienced medical practitioners, diabetes is a result of voracious eating, and tuberculosis is a disease of undereating. We should desire neither to be diabetic nor to be tubercular. Yavad artha prayod janam. We should eat frugally and keep the body fit for advancing in Krishna consciousness. As recommended elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.10, Kamasya Nendriya Pritir Labo Jivata Yavata Jivasya Tattva Jignasya Narto Yas Chehat Karmavi. The real business of human life is to keep oneself fit for advancement in spiritual realization. Human life is not meant for making the senses unnecessarily strong so that one suffers from disease and one increases in an envious fighting spirit. In this age of Kali, however, human civilization is so misled that people are unnecessarily increasing in economic development. And as a result, they are opening more and more slaughterhouses, liquor shops, and brothels. In this way, the whole civilization is being spoiled. Nityam shut shama dehasya daridrasyana kankshina indriyan yanu shushanti himsapi vinivartite. Always hungry, longing for sufficient food, poverty-stricken man gradually becomes weaker and weaker. Having no extra potency, his senses are automatically pacified. Poverty-stricken man, therefore, is unable to perform harmful, envious activities. In other words, such a man automatically gains the results of austerities and penances adopted by saintly persons. It is said that there are four kinds of people: active, intelligent, inactive intelligent, active intelligent, foolishly active and foolishly inactive. So the Brahmins, generally speaking, those in the mode of goodness, they're not doing very much. But they're intelligent. So intelligence is quite important. Just like they were criticizing Columbus, who's supposedly discovered America, because I think the Indians had discovered, who were living there, had already discovered America. In any case, they were criticizing in front of the Queen, Columbus, that actually he didn't do very much. Anyone could have done it. So Columbus said, no, it took intelligence. So he said, well, I'll give you an example. Can you balance this egg on its tip? So they all tried to do it, they couldn't do it. And then they handed it to Columbus, and he said, let's see if you could do it. So he broke the egg, and then he put it on its side. He stood it up after breaking it. He said, well, anyone could have done it. He said, well, why didn't you do it? Anyone could have done it. So, inactive intelligent, and then we have the active intelligent, the kshatriyas, doing so many things. Still, they're getting instruction from the Brahmins, so they're intelligent. And then you have the active foolish. The active foolish is usually people who are like the Naradamas, the perverted reflection of the Vaishya class. They have some intelligence, but they're misusing it. Some material intelligence, but they misuse it for sense gratification. Therefore, they create so many problems for everyone. And then you have the lazy foolish. They're foolish, but they can't do much because they're too lazy to do anything. So they're better than the active foolish, who are doing all kinds of things, destructive things. Now, as it mentions here, if one doesn't eat too much, then one automatically becomes lazy. Probably, in most cases, lazy, foolish, but at least one is not doing so many negative things. And if one eats too much, either one is a kshatriya, engaged in all kinds of activities, or one is a Naradama, running around doing foolish activities, harmful activities. Modern civilization is practically everyone is active foolish. Therefore, most of their energy goes into destructive activities. From their medicine, which is more or less destructive, to their spending excessive amounts of money on defense. We find previously the kshatriyas, they didn't hardly spend any money on defense. They spent it on decorations when they went into battle. they'd have gold helmets and jewels. They'd look nice when they went to fight. But as far as fighting, all they had was usually some bows and arrows, maybe some other kinds of weapons too. Swords, the common people would have swords and bows and arrows, and maybe. But the expert kshatriyas, they'd fight by mantra, astras. They could create a mountain out of an astra by chanting an astra. And they can counteract a wind or rain by astras. So the astras don't cost anything. But they have to be created by higher consciousness, higher than our consciousness. Therefore, although they were active, but in order to concentrate their minds upon how to create these astras, they'd have to concentrate. And they'd have to follow the Vedic culture, they'd have to surrender, etc. Even the demons, when they wanted to become powerful, they'd have to surrender to a guru and follow the instructions. So although the demons generally, they're averse to following scripture, but when they accept a acharya, such as Sukracharya is not outside the Vedic culture, and therefore, indirectly, they follow the Vedic culture also. Therefore, powerful demons such as Jarasandha, he was also very generous and surrendered to the brahmanas, because that's how he got his power. Now, the brahmins generally didn't fight, but still the kshatriyas understood that if the brahmins wanted to, they would be more powerful than they were. Therefore, we find one of the most prominent kshatriyas was actually Brahman, Dronacharya. But because of their even more intense ability to concentrate, they could also be more effective even if they wanted to utilize it for fighting. But generally they didn't. We find in the case of King Vena was a big demon. He was impeding sacrifices. He was claiming himself to be God. So the Brahmins became disturbed by his activities. And just by chanting some vibration very loudly, they killed him. Big kshatriya, fearsome to everyone. But the Brahmin, just by vibrating some sound, killed him. So sound is even more powerful than anything else, and according to how it's vibrated, it produces different effects. Either enlightenment or ignorance, or may produce even weapons of destruction. Because everything comes from vibration. Everything is coming from Brahman, transcendental vibration. Therefore, the universe was created out of Om. Out of the Om coming out of Brahma's mouth, Gayatri. But here it mentions also that one has to be reasonable. Everything is vibration, but we have to know how to utilize everything properly. Therefore, to maintain the body requires, because the body works by producing energy, and energy requires fuel. You can't have a fire unless you have fuel. But if you don't put enough fuel into the fire, it goes out. If you put too much fuel in the fire, it goes out too. So life being in a body depends upon digestion. And digestion depends upon having the right fuel, burning in the right place with the right amount of air. Therefore, when people are young, they think they can eat anything, anytime, anywhere, and everything's going to be digested. Up until the point that it's not digested, well, as soon as we violate the laws of material nature, there's indigestion. Just like if you throw wood into a fire and it burns the wood. After a while, if you don't clean the ashes out, they'll accumulate, and therefore the fire won't work so well anymore. And if you're just thinking, well, 20 years ago the wood burned nicely, I don't know why it's burning now, so let me just throw the wood in, and who cares about the ashes? Well, then after a while, the fire won't work anymore. So there's a science of having the proper place, which includes a clean place for burning, the proper food and fuel, the proper amount of air. If there's too much ash, if everything is blocked up, then there's no more air, and try to light a fire without air. It's extremely, well, it becomes impossible after some time. And if there's no fire, just like often we have during Tulsi Puja, the You try to light the fire with a lighter and it doesn't light because there's no fuel in the fire. There's no fuel in the lighter to light the fire. So even what we've done, eaten previously, is also a factor, how much energy we have to light the fire. So, therefore, if we think we're beyond the laws of material nature and we can do whatever we want, which we usually do when we're younger, when we're unconscious, actively foolish. Then the result is the time comes, it doesn't work anymore. So they say that people spend their health in their younger ages to get wealth, and in their later ages they spend their wealth to get health. They think we're infallible, and then after a while they think we're ineligible. Therefore, one should eat to live, and not live to eat. The purpose of life is not to fill the empty stomach. That's not success. On the other hand, because people fill their empty stomachs with all kinds of food that rajasic and tamasic. Therefore, it also has an effect on consciousness. Because our consciousness, our minds, our subtle minds, are actually a product of the food that we eat. Food that we eat includes mainly, usually, what we're eating physically in terms of what we call food, but also what we're seeing. Everything has a certain, just like we have here, pictures of Krishna and Mother Jasoda. So these are transcendental pictures. So when we see them, we're actually, our consciousness is eating, because we eat with our eyes also. Unless we ate with our eyes, we couldn't see anything. Unless we digested light, we couldn't see what's going on. People have cataracts from birth. When they remove the cataracts, they can't see anything. Because they haven't learned how to digest light. They're not used to it, and therefore they can't see the different varieties. Everything is one. Everything just merges into one picture. It takes intelligence. So in other words, when we're seeing with our eyes, we have to digest it with our intelligence. And then we can actually see. So when we eat something with our eyes, if we're eating something which is ignorant, which is tamasic, then our mind becomes tamasic. If you look at horrible pictures, then your mind becomes tamasic. And because the soul is using its consciousness to experience the material world, that the mind is tamasic, then that's our experience of the world is tamasic. Or rajasic. So what we're seeing, what we're smelling, there are smells which are tamasic, there are smells which are rajasic, there are smells which are sattvic and transcendental. So we're eating with all our senses are eating. If we're feeling something sattvic or rajasic or tamasic or transcendental, that's why we chant on japa beads, tulsi beads. And what to speak of eating, which is it's not the most internal, but for most people, that's what their experience of something internal is. Their stomach. And if we put something sattvic or transcendental, then if we actually honor the prasadam and we chew it, when we chew the food and we honor it, then the transcendental part, the transcendental vibration, the spiritual part of it, we experience that within our mind. And therefore, it's easier to remember Krishna. And we eat things in a way which is tamasic, inattentive, without any reverence, without any appreciation, then our consciousness creates, our very consciousness makes it tamasic. Although it may be transcendental, the food, but our experience will be tamasic or rajarshic. We eat too fast, we don't chew, we're thinking a million things when we eat. Then that's rajarshic. And if we calmly eat and chew the food, but we don't think about Krishna, then it's sattvic. But also, it's also in the material consciousness. But better than rajarshic or tamasic. So there's the science of eating, and what to eat, how to eat, when to eat, how often to eat, in order to actually have the body sukha. We're not trying to make the body super strong. We're not trying to make it. We don't want it to be so super weak either. We want it to be sukha. Su means auspicious or open. And ka means space. So there, we eat, so there's space. We don't want to clog up the digestive system by throwing a ton of food into the digestive, into the stomach. So there's no possibility of digesting. Then there's no space. Then it tries to come out one way or the other. Throw it up, or diarrhea, or gas, or something. And therefore we're more conscious of our bodies than we are of Krishna. What the poor body is going through. We're trying to survive. Therefore, saintly persons, in order to have their consciousness, sukha, open, they don't eat too much and they don't eat too little. Yukta hara viharasya, yukta chetsa sakaramasu, yukta swapni bodhasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. Yet yasnatasya yogosti, na chai kanta manashnata, na chapni shapti shrila asya jagato narvicharjana. Oh, Arjuna, a yogi doesn't eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. One who is temperate in his habits of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation can mitigate the material pains by practicing the yoga system. So for most people, the only way we can be temperate in our habits is that we have to be satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And we can't be satisfied in Krishna consciousness unless we're Krishna conscious. And we can't be Krishna conscious if we offend the devotees, or offend anyone, or any living entities, but especially the devotees. So if we offend the devotees, then automatically we're in ignorance. And then being in ignorance, then we're dissatisfied, we need some happiness, so then we try to find it through eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And the result of that, we fall into more bewilderment and anxiety as we get more and more diseased, and then we're offered medicine in modern society, so-called medicine. But actually medicine, according to Ayurveda, is that which helps us digest. But actually their medicine doesn't help you to digest anything. Allopathic medicine, generally it makes everything worse. It just covers over the symptoms and causes more damage to the body. So the result is that one becomes even more diseased. And then they have to have heavier chemicals to cover over everything more and more and more until one finally has to quit the body. So the point is that one should be careful. That food should be our medicine if we know what we need. In any case, if we eat less, then the body will generally have develop intelligence what to actually eat. And then we can become healthy, sukha, and therefore we have time, we have space to think about Krishna. And if we don't, if the body is diseased, uncomfortable, and that we're doing things to make it uncomfortable and diseased, then the result is that we'll become more and more anxiety over the body. Trying to help it, but without knowing how to help it, how to eat properly, how to sleep properly, had a nice relationship with others, then the result is that we simply cause ourselves more and more distress And the more distress we cause ourselves, the more difficult it is to think about Krishna. Therefore, if we were careful, then we get the results. Of course, we're already, for most of us, we're already poverty-stricken. And if we weren't poverty-stricken, we don't have anything to spend the money on anyhow. We don't have a house, we don't have a car, we don't have anything, or television. So, even when we're not poverty-stricken, we more or less could be poverty-stricken because we have nothing to buy. Maybe a picture of Krishna or something. So, the point is that we more or less, living in the temple or near the temple, whatever, our lifestyle is more or less that of people who are poverty-stricken. So that's good. So that way it helps our Krishna consciousness. The only problem is that the devotees, they generally don't die from under-eating. They usually die from overeating. So we have to be careful that we have nice relations with the devotees so we feel satisfied. Otherwise, we'll take shelter in prasadam. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So I have a question of
it's prophecy. It's pretty loud.
One day I was talking with my friend and we were at the topic of eat and I said to him that I have a break one day from eating and drinking. And he said, oh, we are going to get sick. And my question is, what are some spiritual and health effects on ecology when you don't drink?
Do you completely fast and you don't drink anything?
Yes, sometimes, yes.
Sometimes? How often?
One ecology, don't, one yes, one.
Oh, okay, well, as long as it's regular, it's all right. The body likes regularity. Doesn't like a whole lot of surprises all the time. We don't mind surprises, but the body doesn't like it. What is the result? It means that there's some time for the fire of digestion to burn up all the undigested food within our body. So the result is that generally the next day we feel hungry. Which is a good sign that the digestive is working. Otherwise, how do you know if you're digestive, if you don't feel, never feel hungry? How do you know if you're digestive, if there's any fire? Fire means that we're hungry. That causes us hunger. So it's a good sign. As far as what people say, in Bengal, they say that just like a goat can eat anything, so a madman could say anything. What is the value of a person who doesn't have any knowledge, what they say, what their opinion? Now, if they gave an explanation, scientific and otherwise, better, you know, logical explanation, then we could take it, but just by saying something out of their own particular bias has no value whatsoever. Why take them seriously? No experience. No knowledge and no experience. Yes. Here is our microphone.
Hare Krishna, hvala lepa za zelo poučno lekcijo. Jaz se pa sprašujem, že nekaj časa, ko sem prešla 50. leto.
So thank you for lecture. Thank you for lecture. I was asking some time, something.
Ja, ko sem prešla 50. leto, predvče prehrane.
I came from Bhakti Yoga at 50 years.
No. Restoration, 50. leto.
So after 50 years,
about the nourishing
food.
Kaj to pomeni, da jemo točno ob določenih urah, oziroma se sprašujem, a lahko začutimo, da smo lačni, da nam da telo signal, da smo lačni, da takrat jemo, ne na določene ure.
So what is the point to eat at regular time And not when we are hungry or when we heard the signal of the body. What is the point of regular eating?
Yeah, because then generally speaking, when we eat when we're so-called hungry, a lot of time it's not physical hunger, it's a product of our mental hunger. When the body becomes regulated and we eat at certain times, then the body knows it's time to eat. And if it's not hungry at that time, we don't have to eat. Or we eat very less. The body's very intelligent, if we let it be intelligent. But if we simply follow our emotions and our mind, thinking that's hunger. I mean, just like right now, we brought in a big, you know, cake with ice cream and samosas, whatever else. Automatically, we get hungry. Or just thinking about it, we start getting hungry. It doesn't mean that the body really needs it. It's our emotions that need it, that want it, and the mind that wants it. But physically, we don't really need it. So we have to think, well, I'm restricting my poor body because we're eating at regular times. No, that's what the body wants. It likes that. It's our mind that doesn't like it. It's our mind that wants to enjoy it, but the body doesn't want us, is not very happy when we just go out and serve the mind rather than it, what actually the needs of the body are. Anything else? The body only has a very limited amount of needs, really. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, this is very restricted what it really needs. But the mind is unlimited what it wants. There's no end to what the mind can come up with. But the mind will be satisfied only when we're in Krishna consciousness, really. Otherwise, it'll just come up with ideas of what it needs to be satisfied, of which eating is prominent, and then, of course, sleeping is really powerful. And sex life is, modern society has been developed to, you know, a unlimited degree, as if it's we have an unlimited necessity. And then defense, everyone's anxiety 24 hours a day. And they can't solve that problem at all. Because there's no limit to how much their ignorance is accumulating, which causes their unlimited defense, passion, ignorance. All right. Khwala Granthar Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.